and that the cycle of life is moving around us. We pause to remember the roundness of this earth we live on, to remember the constancy of the sun and the great starry blackness that swirls all around our living. So when it snows, think of the billions and billions of stars that are always around us, and pause to wonder at this universe that we are swinging through, wonderstruck. Mary Doan will light our chalice this morning while I invite you to join in saying the words of our covenant, and you will find those words printed in the order of service. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humanity in fellowship, to respect the nurturing power within all of us, thus do we covenant. Please join in singing our opening hymn, hymn 153, I Woke Up This Morning. Our older youth are sneaking out to go to their neighboring faith's Building Bridges class and start reflecting on how we as Unitarian Universalists can build bridges between our religious tradition and several of the religious traditions in our area. The reading this morning is, in fact, the lyrics to a song. You may know this song by Dar Williams called When I Was a Boy. And if you don't know it, I'm about to introduce you to it, and I hope that you will go out there on the World Wide Web and listen to it, because it's a fine song. And I also think it's important for you to know, if you don't, that Dar Williams is a woman, and so she is writing this song from the perspective as of a young adult woman. I won't forget when Peter Pan came to my house, took my hand and said, and I said, I was a boy. I'm glad he didn't check. I learned to fly, I learned to flight, I learned to fight, I lived a whole life in one night. We saved each other's lives out on the pirate's deck, and I remember that night when I am leaving a late night with some friends and I hear somebody say, it's not safe, someone should help you. You need to find a nice man to walk you home. When I was a boy, I scared the pants off of my mom, climbed what I could climb up on. Don't know how I survived. I guess I knew the tricks that all boys know. And you can walk me home, but I was a boy too. I was a kid that you would like. I was just a small boy on her bike, riding topless, I never cared who saw, until a neighbor came outside to say, get your shirt. And I said, no way, it's the last time, I'm not breaking any law. Now I'm in the clothing store, and the signs say less is more. More for them, not more for me. That can't help me climb a tree in 10 seconds flat. When I was a boy, see that picture? That was me, grass-stained shirt and dusty knees. I know things got to change. They've got pills to sell. They've got implants to put in. They've got implants to take out. But I am not forgetting that I was a boy too. And like the woods where I would creep, it's a secret I can keep, except when I'm tired. Except when I'm being caught off guard, when I've had a lonesome, awful day. The conversation finds its way to catching fireflies out in the backyard. And so I tell the man I'm with about the other life I've lived. And I say, now you're Top Gun, and I have lost, and you have won. And he says, no, can't you see? When I was a girl, my mom and I, we could always talk. And I picked flowers everywhere I walked, and I could always cry. Now, even when I'm alone, I seldom do. I've lost some kindness. But I was a girl, too. And you were just like me, and I was just like you. We try to see each other through those dark times. We try to help bring those mornings. One of the ways our community does that is to take up an offering once a month that we give away to other organizations that are working with us to try to bring that light back to dark times. This morning, we are giving our offering away to an organization called En Belay. And we have the director of the organization here with us this morning, Stephanie Beck. She will talk to us about the work that they do, and during the social hour, you can see pictures of some of that work. Stephanie, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for that really pretty music. It was really nice. And also, thank you so much for your warm welcome here. I'm really happy to be here on behalf of En Belay. And I'm going to take just a couple of minutes. I want to share with you guys a little bit about why En Belay exists. I have a lot of information about how we do it and what we do and back, and I hope that at coffee hour you guys will stop by and say hi and ask me a few questions about it. But En Belay is an organization that is for kids who have a family member with cancer. There are a lot of things out there for people with cancer, for their caregivers, but very few resources for their kids. And I want to tell you a little bit about how we came to be and a story that really moves me, and it's kind of part of the why I am here on a Sunday morning instead of sleeping in, because I'm excited about what En Belay does, and I'm excited to share with you how and why we do it. En Belay was started by a woman who lives from Durham. Her name was Crescentia Healy True, and in her 30s, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. It came back very, very, very strongly in her 40s, and she began to search for a resource for her two daughters. She had two girls, Emma and Erin, and at the time, they were 10 and 12, and as she looked around, there just was nothing for them. There were groups for bereaved children. There were very traditional support groups that were very adult-like, where you sit in a circle and talk about how you feel. And that wasn't going to work for her adventurous, crazy kids. And so she started this thing, looking around and saying, well, there's got to be something just to give these guys a break for the day. Give them a break from cancer, a break from how they're feeling, and she came up with this idea of En Belay. And the story I want to share with you is not so much about what we do at En Belay, but kind of why we do it. And Crescentia was a couple of weeks before she died. She died in 2006, and she ran into a friend at the grocery store parking lot, because that's where you meet people. And she was having this conversation with her friend Anne, and Crescentia had one of those moments that I know every single one of you has had, where you're like talking to someone and some just comes out of the corner of your mind. It's like, oh yeah, I got to do that thing. Well, Crescentia was having this conversation with Anne, and she's like, oh yeah, I got to teach the girls to do laundry. And I'm a mom, I have two girls, and I just was like, of course that's what she's thinking about. She's not checking skydiving off her bucket list. She is making sure that her girls are going to be okay when she moves on to the next place. And that is what inspired her to bring En Belay to our kids, to her kids, to our community's kids. And on behalf of all of those kids, I'm here to thank you for your generosity today. These kids have En Belay, they have each other, and today they have you. So thank you for that.
If you wish to write a check for En Belay, you can make it out to En Belay, Inc., and any cash that is put into the basket will also be given to En Belay. On these mornings when we have a give-it-away offering, we write down our joys and sorrows, and I will read them later in the service. So if you have a joy or sorrow that you would like to share with your community, please find one of our note cards that are at the end of the rows here, and bring those cards up and put them in the Tree of Life bowl during the offering time, and I will read them later in the service. And of course, you are welcome to light a candle during this time for a memory, a hope, a wish for spring. The morning offering for An Belay will now be received.
Thank you.
I share with you these two joys that are written down this morning, and we know that there are many more joys and sorrows unfolding in the lives around us. Susan Gorman writes, "It is a deep joy to see Stephanie Beck here today on behalf of Aunt Belay. As Ben and Harry and I are all busy rebuilding our lives this year, Aunt Belay is never out of my thoughts. I see the impact the program has had on us in so many ways. My dream is that Aunt Belay will be well-funded as far into the future as we can see. I am deeply grateful." And Karen Patnode says, "I am pleased to be going home to Canada for Easter. What makes this trip especially grand is that my younger brother will be home at the same time. It has been 7 years since we have seen each other. What a joy." Let us take a moment to listen to names. We have done this a few times as part of our joys and sorrows. We'll just sit together, and if there is a name that you would like to say to honor the joy that is unfolding, or a sorrow, someone who you miss, someone who you're thinking of and wish to send strength, we'll just sit together and you can say the name from where you are sitting. We may hear names all at once and we may hear them singularly. And we'll just listen to the names in the quiet for a moment. And then we'll take a breath of peace together to honor all that is held in this room. I invite you to speak names. We hear these names. We honor the stories. I invite you to take a deep breath of peace for what is spoken here and for what is unspoken. We will let our young people and their leaders go to Young Church, and we will have another moment for meditation a little bit later in the service. Please join in singing. I was one of those girls who was a boy for a good part of my childhood. There were a few years when my best friend was a boy, and people occasionally mistook me for a boy, and I was always pleased when that happened. For one thing, I was pleased to be able to fool an adult. That is something that crosses all gender lines. And for another, I knew that when they thought I was a boy, I was freer. And I was pleased. I tried to be a boy when I was 6, 7, 8, maybe even a little older. And I think it's because I had already at that age figured out that if I wanted to make my own decisions, if I wanted to play outside all the time, if I wanted to be in command of my life, I was better off as a boy. We talk about the glass ceiling and about pay gaps and about where women aren't in charge of things. And so there is this awareness of how sexism hems women in. And it's useful to notice that it shows up in little spots all the time, every day. And those are the times when try to get away with being a boy for a few minutes. And the thing that I have come to understand, to really understand and not simply intellectually understand recently, is that just as much as sexism hems women in, men are hemmed in different ways, but in some of the same spots, and that we've all sort of gotten backed into a corner, that our society limits choices for both men and women. Most of the time, we have no idea we're doing it, don't even see it happening because we're so used to it. We just accept it as the way things are. And one of the many gifts of having a young child is that you get to see some things happen that you've stopped seeing because they happen all the time. One of the many moments that we had with our little boy was when he was still a sort of sweet, round thing, and he had these big eyes and those long, curled eyelashes, which women spend a lot of money to try to achieve. For the first year or more of his life, when I was out in public with him and we encountered strangers, it was about 50-50 about whether people would guess he was a boy or a girl. And they would just start addressing this little round blob as totally engaging blob as he or she. They would just decide. And I decided that because it really didn't matter, I wasn't going to correct them. Occasionally it would come up somehow that they had been talking about this round pink thing as a girl and they realized that he was a boy and they got all flustered. And I said, he is not worried about it. But one of our friends who is delightful with Ronan, is just enjoys him and plays with him and is just wonderful, would periodically say, oh, he's all boy. And he would say it about this little creature who really wasn't thinking about that yet. And he would look at our sweet child and say that several times. And so finally we had to say, what do you mean? Because we really didn't know. And what he said was, oh, I just picture him holding a truck. Which was interesting, because first of all, Ronan was not holding a truck, and at that point expressed absolutely no interest in trucks. And for at least a year after this conversation, was scared of trucks. So it was pretty clear that our friend's response and his commentary about Ronan being all boy was all about whatever was going on in our friend's mind and had absolutely nothing to do with the child in front of him. It was pretty clear that our neighbor wanted this child to play with trucks, that was an important trajectory that he had in mind. And no one else did, least of all the person he was addressing. Ronan does now play with some trucks. He also plays with his pretend kitchen, and he really likes pink. And red is pretty good. And he loves to help me cook. And this weekend we sat and looked at the daffodils in a vase on the kitchen table, and he said, the yellow flowers are beautiful. He also said this week, sometimes I'm a girl. He's 3. We're having gender conversations at 3. I don't know exactly what he means when he says sometimes he's a girl. He's sorting out all manner of things in his own way. I do know that if we had insisted on him being all boy, we would have been taking choices away from him from before he was even walking. That he is getting to sort out a complexity of who we are and how we get to be in the world that's real. It's that complex. And he gets to do it without us or our warm-hearted friends taking choices away from him. And the thing that happens when people declare him to be all boy is that they often stop seeing what he's actually doing. So they notice that he has some trucks. And that's it. He's all boy. We're good. And they stop seeing the whole range of things that he does, the possibilities for his life. And you know, we sometimes encourage people to pick a different colored crayon. And then there's a story from the other end of the spectrum in a number of ways, a very public story about a person who is a little bit older than Ronan. It's a story that you have probably been following this week. It's about a certain presidential candidate. Her political views are not important in this conversation. I'm just going to repeat something that was said about her, some instructions she received from some helpful friends, perhaps. It was the instruction to Hillary Clinton that she should smile more. Have you been following this commentary in the news? So, I don't know if you've ever been told you should be smiling when you're not smiling, but it's never, well, I have never received it particularly well. I think that's true, whatever gender you are. And the thing that's really notable about this, besides the fact that it's kind of annoying to tell people to smile, is that no one else in the wide range of candidates in either party has received this encouragement to smile. Well, actually, it turns out that there was one other person who received the instruction that they should be smiling more. Are you following this? The other woman. How many men were in the race? 50? 19. It's only 19. Two people were told to smile. Political views entirely aside, women are reminded that they only have a few choices about how they can appear in public. You have to smile. You have to smile no matter what. And they've done a whole series of studies, which you can Google, about women smiling more, women smiling when they don't want to smile, women being told to smile. Women are reminded all the time, you don't have this choice over here. You only have this choice here. Or you will be critiqued for not meeting our needs. Because just like our friend who had this story about what Ronan should be doing with his hands or his toys, this is the same thing. It's really about what the person on the other side wants and not about what the person themselves is doing. So when I was researching about smiling, there was one other incident that was called to my mind. Do you remember the Serena Williams incident in which she had just come off of a pretty intense tennis match? That's all she does is play intense tennis matches. And again, a reporter asked her why she wasn't smiling. When you turn that around, you can really begin to hear the absurdity of it. If you say, dear Bernie Sanders, you should smile more, it sounds different. Dear Ted Cruz, you should smile more. Whether that's true or not, the instruction to people to do so is changed by who is being instructed. This is certainly not the worst of what happens in the world. Either the declaration that this child who is scared of trucks should be playing with trucks, or that someone should be smiling at any given moment. There are bigger problems, and we all know about those as well. And I think that in some way, this is just about the size of problem we can stand to take on. That the bigger things are so big that you just sink when you try to imagine how to take them on. And we do get hemmed in by little bit by little bit. And so maybe we figure it out little bit by little bit. Take on the things that you can really think of how to deal with them. So men and women both get boxed in. You can be interested in these certain things, and you can arrange your face in this certain way. And we do it without meaning to take away people's sense of self, without meaning to constantly adjust how people behave. Dar Williams describes so well the parts of our humanity that we give up as we get hemmed in by society. For women, it's that kind of freedom and self-determination. And for men, it is often their tender hearts. It's part, I think, of how we control in our larger lives some of the biggest things in life, vulnerability and power. Okay, we can't manage both of these things, so you take the vulnerability, you take the power, and no trading. Because that gets confusing. Meanwhile, actual human beings are all mixed up. Vulnerability and power, tenderness and rage, being direct, being a good listener. It's actually all mixed. Everyone has some of each of those things, and we have to navigate the complexity of that. And it's hard. And that is the work of people in spiritual community. If we are going to live into the covenants that we have, one of which we say aloud every week, one of which we have printed in our order of service every week, those seven principles, if we are going to respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person, if we are going to respect the nurturing power within all of us, we have to collectively wrestle with the ways that we limit each other's choices every day based on who we think is a man and who we think is a woman. And that getting told what to do can be especially intense for young people because, well, we're aware that they're learning the rules. They don't know how we've set things up for people, and so they therefore just break the rules all the time. And so we go about systematically trying to get them to comply to rules that mostly don't make any sense. And we do it mostly unawarely, like our friend with Ronan. And have any of you tried to shop for children's clothing recently? There are only two colors, it turns out, that are available for clothing, for the fabric for children's clothing. Pink and blue. There are a couple of shades of each of those. And you can be pink and butterflies and sparkles, or you can be blue, a little bit of plaid maybe, trucks, oh, and dinosaurs. That's it. If you search, you can find some other things. Newborn clothes are so aggressively gender-coded, it is stunning. And they really don't care. And I think it's gotten worse in the past decade, because I have gotten as hand-me-downs from my sister some of the clothes from her now teenage children, from when they were toddlers, and there were a few more colors in the mix. I don't know why it has gotten more intense, but it looks to me like it has. Pink and sparkles are great. Blue and trucks are great. I just want there to be some middle ground. Just some options. I don't want the boys or the girls to be forced into one particular way of being, or to have to be all the way on the other side and have to grapple with all of the critique that comes with that. And we can't fix every little thing. I have tried. It's not possible. At least not yet. So I think what we have to do is pick a moment in each day. Just catch one of those little moments, one of those comments, one of those things that comes out of our own mouth, for heaven's sakes, that afterwards you think, why did I say that? Or why did I do that? We've all been trained, and we all do things that don't make sense. And so if we can just catch them, just a few of them, it'll start to make a little more space for the small people and the bigger people. And I want you to know that you're already, by being part of a Unitarian Universalist congregation, you're already making some space. There's the OWL program, which we have been talking about this year, which we run every other year for adolescents. It's a place where they talk about gender and how to respect each other and how to leave a little space for the complexity that is actual human life. And we're looking into the possibility of running the program that was designed for grade school children so that we can offer that space when our Unitarian Universalists are a little younger, give them that hand a little sooner in life. Because adolescence, as you know, is a particularly intense time for this. Lindsay Jean and a member of our congregation have also set up to show a movie here called The Mask You Live In, which is about how our boys get hemmed in, how they get just this very narrow space in which to be a boy. Very narrow. And it talks about how humiliation is used to control boys and men. It's a really useful movie, and it also comes with a chance for conversations about what happens and how we begin to just make that little bit of space, just an inch at a time, which eventually becomes more and more space to breathe. So I invite you this week to try something, to make just a little space. Try it for spring, for the inherent worth and dignity of yourself or someone that you love. Try it for that nurturing power within all of us. You may have already had a thought about that little thing that you want to try or want to keep doing to make space for men or women to just open up the possibilities. And here are two other possibilities. For women, it's to notice when you are being nice or saying yes while you have that little naggy feeling, that little that you don't want to, or that you're giving in again. You can try to not say yes, but just for this week, if you can even just try to actually notice when that is happening. Just notice that you're being nice again. You might even notice when you're smiling, because you're supposed to. And for men, I invite you to notice when in your day you have to go numb. when something happens and you have to not feel it. It could be joy that you have to go numb on. It could be anger that you have to put a lid on. It could be sorrow. That's often not allowed either. Again, you don't have to do something different. Just notice, is there a moment when you think you have to put it away again? Both of these things that I've described are moments when we are told we don't have that option, when we have to be a little bit separate from who we are. And it's hard to step back all the way into that. Now, the thing that I've described for your gender may not feel right to you at all, because everybody has their own path that they've walked through the world. But if you were chuckling when I described one of those things, or if you had that little sinking feeling, try it. 2 weeks from now, I'll talk again a little bit about what it's like to encounter these little spaces. It's the little things all day long. That's how we'll get each other back. That's how we'll get ourselves back. That's how we'll get to that feeling that the choir sang about that eagle that wants the sky. May not be able to leap off into that clear blue morning today, but inch by inch, we may get to that space that we're all longing for. I invite you into a time of meditation or reflection. You may want to let your mind turn over what has been said and sung so far this morning. You may want to settle into your body, into your breathing. One of my practices now when I am sitting and breathing is to remember to also sit up like I'm pleased to be in my own body. But instead of trying to sternly hold my shoulders back, I think instead about lifting my heart in good moments or in painful moments. I think, lift your heart. Even now, lift your heart. Even now, I invite you to join in our collective breathing meditation practice, which is singing. Please remain standing and join in singing. Let's not sing it, let's just say it. The unison benediction. The words are printed in the order of service. Go in peace.